Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Happy New Year! Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. You're listening to the Dork Forest. It is available on all of the websites, and including iTunes and Stitcher and YouTube. And if you go to dorkforest.com or jackiecation.com, you'll find links to all of it. And then I have another podcast with Lori Kilmartin just about stand-up comedy. But this is the Dork Forest, and it's January 2020, so Happy New Year, and feel free to start donating again. That's right. Donations went off last year, and I don't blame you, but think of me. And PayPal will let you do it monthly if you want, but I understand if you don't want, because monthly is its own commitment. But the people who do it monthly, I said do-do. I totally appreciate that. But there is also going to be new merch. I'm phasing out one of the Dork Forest t-shirts. I think it's the black one. It might be the green one. The green one's almost completely out of stock, so I think it might be the Dork Forest one itself, but feel free to try and order stuff so that I can get those two new shirts on the website, because right now the merch page is a bit crowded, shall we say. By the way, my website is done by Vilmos. You know that. The song that was just sang was composed by Mike Rickberg. He'll sing his version of the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program, and Patrick Brady is going to fix this audio and has been doing it for lo these many years, and I genuinely appreciate that about him so much. The new shirts are going to be a shirt with a bunch of my dad's sayings and a drawing of his face on that Jenny Fine did. And Jenny Fine, of course, was the artist who did the Meat Shield t-shirt, and she also did the art for the Horcrux album and DVD. You can get all of my old merch still at JackieCation.com, and the new merch, feel free to email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and we'll figure it out, is what I'm saying. I'm going to record a new album in 2020, but I don't know where or when. Feel free to come and watch me work on the new hour at JackieCation.com. Has all of my tour dates, and at JackieCation on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. There's also a Dork Forest Ranger page that you can get into. Donations, PayPal, Venmo, do whatever you need to do. But I'm very appreciative of everybody's support over the last 13 years. Let's get into some dorkdoms, shall we? Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my living room. Minnesota comic?
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
Dawn Brody.
Dawn Brody, Minnesota comic. That works.
Dawn Brody, Minnesota comic. It's Dawn, D-A-W-N, underscore, Brody, B-R-O-D-E-Y?
Yes.
I went E-Y. There we go. So I'm correct.
E-Y is correct.
E-Y. So Dawn Brody, you guys, it's at Dawn underscore Brody, and then it's dawnbrody.com, and you do stand-up. You got a couple of shows here in Los Angeles coming up.
Yes.
The 25th, you're doing Story Smash. Is that Christine Blackburn's?
That's Christine Blackburn's.
And then the dating game, you're hosting a dating game the night before Valentine's Day at Flappers on the February 13th.
Correct.
So these are things.
Yes, fun.
But we're going to dork out.
Oh, my God. I can't
about
wait.
George Washington.
Oh, my God.
This is so interesting.
I'm
why?
So excited.
Why George Washington, first of all, and then we'll get into it.
Oh, God, I'm so excited. I just live for these moments when I get to talk about George Washington. Like, and I'm invited to. I don't have to, like, really work it in.
You don't got
to
farm it in.
Why George Washington? Because he's the baddest, bestest, dopest founding father, American political figure. I would go so far as to say among the greatest in history.
But there's
globally 200 years is nary a flash
it's just
in the pan.
It's
to
just
really,
a flash in the
it's
pan.
It's hardly, you know, you can't put 200 years on the scale of like Galileo.
Right. You talk about
or
somebody.
Or Jesus, mm-hmm. But he is something. And
when did it happen? When did the obsession begin? When did the dorkdom?
Here's what it was. I was probably always obsessed, but sort of like you're from Wisconsin. You understand
right.
How you're like, yeah, I love the Packers from Wisconsin. And when you live in Wisconsin, you're
right.
Like, yeah, because it's just, that's it. That's of course, I love the Packers. But when I move to Minnesota, as I did at 18,
right,
I'm going to discover that Minnesotans love their Vikings just the same way as we love our Packers. We just say, oh, we love the Packers. Everybody knows we love the Packers. But everybody loves their team like that.
This analogy is so funny since I don't care about the Packers.
You don't?
No. I know a little bit about them, but only because I was raised in Wisconsin and there's no way to not know.
But see, and that's enough. I'm not even saying it's like beating heart love. Right. But you know because it's just it's happening, right?
Right. I know who the pitcher is. I know all the things. Sure. And I love to and say that. That's fun for me.
I know the pitcher is.
Yeah.
It's
Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers. He's a guy.
He is so good, but I hate his dickies. I hate the way he wears his turtlenecks. He looks like such a nerd in his turtlenecks.
Does he?
Yeah. I mean, I know in the dork forest, I should not throw stones. But
what
a dork.
But this is not a Packer dork. Dorked him. George Washington.
George Washington. So everybody knows.
What'd you do, go to Virginia or something?
No. But I know that like everybody loves George Washington. We say that. You know, as kids in elementary school, it's like you put the wigs on President's Day and everyone, you know, and we all love him. He's on our money, and we all know George Washington found everyone know like he's a
everyone friend. Knows who he is.
And
at
then
the
it
very
was like
least.
The more correct. And then I'd read a little bit about it and be like, yeah, he's the best. I'm like, all right, narrative, he's the best. But then I have a history degree from the University of Minnesota.
Congratulations,
study. Thanks. So expensive.
Poly-sci.
Hey,
yeah, very nice.
The so useful. So wow, look at us. But the more I learned, the more I loved. To the point where
I realized, studying U.S. history.
Yes.
All right.
And the more he's one of those figures that you can go in blinders off.
Okay.
And just consume the history about him.
Right.
Without falling into, like, Hamilton. You know Hamilton?
Yeah.
Did you see the thing?
I saw it. I never liked Hamilton because of his economic policies prior. But yeah. I had some issues. I also read Burr, the Gore Vidal novel, which took the side of Burr, oddly enough. Right. Hence the name.
Because sometimes you got to shoot a guy. You know?
Well, it was, Hamilton supposedly said that Burr was fucking his daughter. And so that's why they he might have been. There was, I don't know if it was an unnatural love, but what I do know is that he was psyched about his kid. But I just think that they always sort of hated each other, and it was just the last stone. So, sure. But now here's the thing: is I've always sort of liked George Washington, and then I heard some there's always the dark side of all of the founding fathers.
Yeah, here's the trouble, because I can't say obviously he's not perfect.
He can't,
but he's perfect in certain ways. He's got certain qualities. So the imperfect stuff is that he was a toothless slave owning hemp farmer who murdered sleeping Germans on Christmas Day. Fact. What? Like he did all of those things. Like that's just like, but aside from that.
Right. See, okay. Now we'll get to it in the course of events. Let's start with his birth.
Oh,
what do you know about George Washington?
Oh, very important, actually, Jackie. Fundamental, in fact, is this. Who gives a fuck? Because not who gives a fuck, like what? But I mean, the important thing about American history is that you don't know shit about his parents or where he was from. It doesn't fucking matter because in America,
we don't know,
and we don't.
But
care.
The weird thing is, he was a landowner.
I'm here as a dork who dorks about George Washington, and I don't actually know. It's sort of like Jesus's years after from before he was.
I read that the Lamb. I read that book. until he was 30.
Right.
It was there was a book from when he was born. Right after he was born until he was about 30 years old.
Yes,
there's a book.
That's
it's fiction.
Right. But
anyway.
Who knows? Because nobody knows what happened then.
So, okay. So you've read several books about George Washington.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So he...
What are your favorite fun facts? Let's just go there.
So, you know the teeth, right? The whole thing about...
See, this is one of the things I heard about his teeth is that he had a set of wooden teeth, but he also had a set of human teeth.
Yeah.
That he made from slaves.
Sure.
Right. That's not cool.
That's not great.
Do you know if they were alive slaves or dead slaves?
I don't know that. I would guess they were dead slaves, though.
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
No, I think they'd be healthier if you pulled them from a live human being.
Well, recently alive. I don't think you have to be like, come here, let me see, I want that. I mean, I don't want to, it would be very remiss of me to come and talk about George Washington and suggest that he pulled teeth out of his living slaves. God, what a nightmare. I don't know.
But it would be remiss to not mention
not
that
mentioned.
He had a set of teeth made out of people that he owned. That he owned people.
Well, and this is, here's the thing. You want
to
know
I have
the really
a favorite
nugget.
Thing about George Washington
yeah.
was that he stepped down.
Jackie, that... that's the key. Because when you talk about the qualities of George Washington,
right.
What makes him, what's the explosive thing? Why do I have a picture of him in my locker? Why is my daughter's middle name Washington?
Why is it?
Because he stepped down. But it was more than just stepping down. It was crafting from the fundamental basis of who he was. Not just not grasping the power that was laid in front of him, that
right.
was there for the grasping.
Right.
But not trying to then decline, but then influence who would grasp it after him. It was like this three-tiered benevolence that's unique in humans, that is remarkably unique among men and among powerful, rich men who are also generals, who also display the characteristics.
Who has all the power.
Of dominance.
Essentially, he turns down the One Ring. He is Galadriel.
He absolutely is. And he also asked for the power for the moment he needed it as a general to beat the British in this ridiculously unlikely war. Unlikely victory when he was given sort of absolute power, because they really tried Congress to be like during the Revolutionary War when the stakes were so high and the odds were so devastatingly against us winning.
Right.
They tried to be like, just send us we're going to try to dole out money as it's needed and continue to legislate and continue to send drafts and continue to send pensions. And we're going to try to do all of this stuff during the war.
Right.
So when you want to charge, you just go ahead and let us know. And then we're going to talk about totally, you can charge and we'll pay for that. And it's like, okay.
Right.
Real quick, they were like, and they were like, okay, cool. So okay, we'll pre-approve to a certain amount, but then if you want to extend that amount, you have to come back. And he was like, and it's not going
to
fucking work. You're going to have to just let me do whatever the fuck I want on behalf of the entire government.
Right.
I'm going to have to be able to look at a guy and be like, I'm telling you right now, I will give you a house if you blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you, congratulations, you're a general. I have to be able to just do that in the moment. And everyone was really like, well, here we go.
Yeah, well, here we go.
Here we go. Here it fucking goes. And it's, isn't it just the likely that we get George Washington and we had King George. Now we're going to have another King George. They have the same fucking name.
Right.
And they worship the same fucking God. They speak the same fucking language. And we are so stupid that we don't think that this guy is going to set up a monarchy or something like it.
But we don't have a choice because we're in it.
But we're in it.
But,
and you know what? Let's have that guy instead of us. Like, even worst case scenario, then let's have that guy instead again.
We'll deal with that guy after.
We'll deal with that guy after. And Jackie, it's like, why you were like, what can you talk about for an hour? Because the unlikeliness that we win, then the unlikeliness that he steps down, and not just steps down, says, first of all, I don't want it. And they were like, you have to, listen, it's so tenuous. Everyone else is a cunt. Everyone else is an ugly cunt. Alexander Hamilton, cunt. John Adams, drunk, kind of cunty. But they're all, you're the only one that everyone is like, This guy is a good guy, and this guy is honest, and this guy doesn't know bullshit.
Well, I think it was the heroism that everybody here's what I've heard.
Yeah,
he was tall.
Oh,
and people love tall.
Oh, he was tall.
People get credit for being tall.
He was tall, and he had broad shoulders, and
they get credit for it without having the rest of it.
Yeah, like Chevy Chase.
And Chevy Chase But the thing is, so he was in other wars and he was not good at them.
No.
Because it's a learned skill and war sucks. And when you're all lined up and pointed at each other, that's dumb. That's a dumb way to have
a war. It's a dumb way to have a war.
And then he literally became what was the battle that he won unlikely? What was the unlikely battle?
Well, the first one was Dorchester Heights. Battle of Boston. So that was the first, because we didn't even know what a general was going to look like, because the first war that George Washington fought on American soil was the French and Indian War, when he fought, of course, with the British, the French and the Indians versus Britain and the British colonial Americans.
Right. And I don't think the French called it that.
No. They were like, this war is called Us and the Indians.
It wasn't even called Us and the Indians War. It's not fucking cool.
No.
Go ahead.
But that was what George Washington called it. I mean, that was in hindsight why we didn't, of course, call it World War One or Two.
Right? Right.
So George Washington fucked up big time in the French and Indian War when he was just a dude on behalf of the British. He was he was supposed to go deliver this very important message to a French general somewhere. Regarding a treaty. So, okay. You know, a proposed peace. And his native guide,
okay,
when they get to the dude, just hatchets his skull in half and kills the guy.
Oh.
And Washington's like, oh, shit.
Okay.
Wow.
That's not. Do you have another guy I can give this note
we're
to?
We were supposed to give him a note.
Right.
I don't know how we miscommunicated why we were here. And that was really bad. And he was like, boy. And when he got back, they were like, that was really badly handled. And he offered to resign.
Right.
And his superior was like, are you kidding me? No, you.
You didn't hatchet the guy.
You didn't hatchet the guy, and you got to stay. You have a long way to go.
Okay.
So, and similarly, when he becomes, and he does other, he's an okay guy. He's an okay general. His key is he married a good woman. Martha Custis was a very, very, very rich widow.
Right.
And George Washington was in a position to become General George Washington in 1776, primarily because of the land he owned, exclusively because he married Martha Custis.
Okay.
He had...
Did the plantation come with Mary?
Yeah.
Okay.
He wasn't a bum, but he didn't have a huge amount of prospects.
Right.
She is she was the richest
girl
widow.
In town.
Oh, yeah.
And she was
a
widow.
She had a few kids. Yeah. She had a few kids, which was great because Washington had... smallpox. He had
typhoid or
yes, red scarlet fever. Something. He had a terminal, not always, but an illness as a kid that he barely survived, but that left him infertile. He could never have kids, and he kind of knew that.
I don't. Oh.
They could sort of even diagnose that at the time. It was also why he was very pro-vaccine. He forced vaccines on his troops.
Okay.
Because he was like, he saw how it would decimate an army, and he had experienced it firsthand. He was like, don't.
My ad. I'm about to do an ad. I have an ad for makeup. That's right. I'm very excited about it. If you use cosmetics, you just go to thrivecosmetics.com/dork and use the code dork for 15% off your first purchase. And I'm going to spell it because it's Thrive Cosmetics. Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E, cause, C-A-U-S-E, medics, M-E-T-I-C-S. .com/dork, thrivecosmetics.com/dork. Use the code dork for 15% off. Here's the thing about this stuff. It's all the good things that makeup can be, right? So it's not tested on animals, it's vegan, and it's long-lasting and all this stuff. I got mascara and an eyeliner and a skincare thing, and it's really great. My eyelashes look amazing, quite honestly. Very long, very luscious. It doesn't flake, because that's my biggest problem. It's easy to use. One of the greatest things I like about it was it all came in boxes, right? But it came so simply, like, eco-friendly packed. You know how sometimes you'll get makeup and it'll be packed in all kinds of plastic? This was a mascara tube in a tiny box. There was no packing. There was nothing. Just tube, box, recyclable. The same with the skin cleanser and the eyeliner that I got and the lip filler. I got lip filler, which is like a lip gloss, but it has more collagen-y kind of stuff to it. I like it. Anyway, so they're all high-performance, skin-loving ingredients. And here's one of the coolest things about cosmetics, C-A-U-S-E, medics, right? Thrive Cosmetics, is that they give back to the community. I read an article in Vanity Fair a couple of years about them. So when they asked to advertise on the show, I was like, yeah. Yeah, that'll be fine. They give back to cancer patients who have lost their eyelashes and eyebrows because of chemo. They also, they have a nonprofit partners that donate funds to all kinds of different groups, including women emerging from homelessness, surviving domestic abuse, and women fighting cancer. So Thrive Cosmetics has all kinds of stuff. What you want to do, if you use makeup, get this makeup, because it also helps women in need. So go to thrivecosmetics.com/dork and use the code dork for 15% off your first purchase. So Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/dork. Use the code dork for 15% off. All right, let's get back into the show.
So he couldn't have kids. He knew he could never have kids. And he really, really loved Martha's kids. And they admired him deeply from all personal and public records. They adored him. And one of them died in his arms and it just destroyed him. And his love of him.
She,
and
Martha, how many kids did she have? Like three?
Three, at least three. It could be as many as five, but three for sure. And Jackie's the one that died that Washington was really close to.
Okay.
But really, really significant is that he didn't have any heirs.
Yeah.
And that was a key for the other bastards in the process who would have been like, okay, so how can we kind of leech the power that Washington has and kind of put it in another vessel that we can then master? And right, history right. is full of children and bastards being right. being utilized for that purpose. And it didn't exist. And that was another reason why Washington was the perfect choice, because he didn't have a lineage.
Right. There was no obvious heir.
Correct.
So it could not. So, and then... Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know he didn't have
really
any kids from his loins.
From his loins, which wouldn't may or may not have been a huge inheritance issue, but as it stood, even his stepchildren didn't appear particularly ambitious, and there just wasn't a...
Right, so they were cool with just having a giant bag of money and living on the plantation.
Correct.
So,
and in Mount Vernon. And Mount Vernon, this is my so his noble, ability to see power. Because the first, then after the war, they're like, well, you have to be the guy. And he's like, all right. But for like 4 years, because... I have to go back to Mount Vernon, and I have a real like love of my childhood home. I was rural Wisconsin, 85 acres in the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin Rapids.
Oh, Wisconsin. Oh, Rapids,
you know Rapids?
Man.
Hey, man.
Rapids.
Wrestling. Go mm-hmm. Raiders.
Okay.
And loved it. My parents built a house on 85 acres of land out there, and my two older sisters and I grew up just running barefoot and naked through the woods, like, you know, right. Deliverance. But like,
is Rapids, is that kind of by Madison?
I feel 2 hours north.
It's okay.
It's so 20 it's south, minutes from Point.
So it's in between Stevens Point and Madison?
Yeah.
Or is it in between Superior? And like, is it 2 hours south of Superior?
Yeah, it'd be about 2 hours. Yeah. It's right in the very center of the state.
Of nothing.
It's right like, in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Right. Like, there isn't even a highway. You have to take a two-lane highway across.
Dude.
Yeah.
When I go home for like a thing.
Where do you fly?
Oh.
Let's just briefly sidetrack.
Briefly, as if
get
we
some
could
traffic.
So, dude, you wake up. Let's just say, and let's say you don't have a toddler. Let's say you're just you.
Right.
You get to LAX and all that fuckery. Then you get to LAX. You either have a layover or whatever. You fly into Minneapolis or Chicago.
Those are your only... You could fly into Milwaukee.
You could fly into Mozanine.
You could fly into Mozanine.
But at Mozanine... Okay, well, that's a deep cut. The trouble with Mozanine is that it's like a...
It smells like a paper mill.
Which is the smell of my people. Because
is it,
Wisconsin
is it the
Rapids...
the smell of your childhood?
Wisconsin Rapids. The rapids of the Wisconsin River. Well, it turned out a lot of paper, Jackie.
A lot of wood.
Yeah. It's all paper mills and mm-hmm. stink. Boy, it smells like an ass. Just butt.
It smells
armpit,
bad.
Armpit, butt. So yeah, you land in the armpit, and then you drive to the sphincter.
Okay.
That's kind of the route.
Is that the route? But what, so, but.
It costs thousands and thousands of dollars to do it that way. And driving to Mozanie,
Well, the thing is you could fly into Mozanie, but it would cost more money, and you have to switch three planes.
You
anyway.
Have at least two layovers. Yeah. And the odds of your plane coming in or out of Mozanie on time.
Pretty slim?
Pretty slim. So
okay.
That means that you, Chicago or Minneapolis, and then you drive 3.5 hours into deer-ridden, winding two-lane highways.
Yeah, just completely, yeah.
It's like a video game where there's just serial killers and beef jerky and deer.
And deer.
And you,
plenty of it.
And you have to pick, and it's not that you're not going to die, you just have to pick.
How you want to go?
Like,
anyway, you love your home.
I love my home, despite all of that. It's really worth getting there. Like the ring. It's like, worth the journey.
It's worth the journey.
And I just feel very nostalgic, and I love it. I just love it. And it sort of has a personified entity that just is very new. I haven't been there for years. My parents left. It was, tragic trauma. Sold it when I was like 14.
Okay.
So it also is sort of idolized
history.
Oh,
right. So, wow, it's a fly in amber. It's
correct.
Like, it's literally, it just,
correct.
It looks amazing from the distance time.
But when I think about that, the 85
those
acres,
bucolic,
those beautiful raisins,
yes.
I just, oh, it was so great. And looks amazing. So when I, in the history of George Washington, learned that he really feels that way about Mount Vernon, his plantation.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's battles, because I'm such a nerd and I read all the books. So I read all the books about the battles. I know the timeline. And then I've read all of his personal letters. And then I've read all of the other people's letters about him. And then I, and you can cry. during these really critical battles, we're like, oh my God, we're definitely going to die. Like the guys are walking barefoot through the snow. They're eating their shoes.
Right.
We don't have enough guns. Oh my God, we're so going to die. But we're going to get up in the morning and we're going to have a miracle or we're all going to die. And he has a note in his pocket that says victory or death, just in case he loses sight of things. He can pull it out and be like, yep, those are the stakes. That same night of the night before that
it's
battle.
It's like a to-do list in his pocket.
Victory or death.
Okay.
Yep. He, writes a letter to Mount Vernon, to his groundskeeper at Mount Vernon, saying that it's really important that they remember to plant the roses when the snow thaws, because that way they'll come to full bloom at the time. And he also heard that the cook and the housekeeper are in love. And they're going to be moving because the war is moving. And so the everybody's going to be moving. And he just wants to make sure that he makes sure that those two stay together in the move. Because he heard they were in love and he doesn't want them to get separated. And then he's like, okay, what else? And like, that's where my hand went over my heart. When I look at the date, you know, because you read, they're not all correlated. It's sort of like, what fucking date did he write this letter? And I look
and
back
look
and I'm
back
like, oh my God.
Right.
Do you know what the letter he wrote right after that was? To Congress saying, we're all fucking dead.
Just depending who he's writing to. So who did he write the letter about the housekeeper? He wrote it to his groundskeeper, right?
Yeah.
Because I also read a thing where Martha burned all of his letters.
Yeah, right. God, thank God, because I would have plastered my body with that stuff.
Right. She got rid of his letters.
Yeah.
Alexander Hamilton's wife got rid of her letters.
Yeah.
And so the letters that we have from George Washington mm-hmm. are letters that he wrote to other people that they kept.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yep.
So.
And he had, so letters, correspondence to Congress, heads of state, and then household. Lawyers. One of them, for example, because he was so tall.
Yeah.
And he would order his suits from this fantastic English tailor, Scandal.
Scandal.
Right? Oh, there's no American tailors, George. Anyway, he would write his letters to his English tailor, and he was getting really frustrated because he wrote his height perfectly proportioned.
Yeah.
And then they'd send the suit pack, and it like didn't quite fit.
Yeah.
And he was like...
perfectly. He wrote that he was perfectly proportioned.
This height, perfectly proportioned. Why is this sleeve so short?
Oh, my God.
And he would get, so there was like a little bit
of it. Some weird
so those
signs.
Kind of letters, you know what I mean? Like those are the historical record that I love. That is the marrow that you can kind of suss out. And Martha was well, I think, within her bounds to burn those letters because he would have had to have been personal with her. Anyone, I think, going through, things of that caliber. And very, very rarely in history do people really, really know that this is a historic, I don't need to have the perspective of the future to know that this is a pivotal moment and that we're doing something tremendous here. And they have themselves read letters of great people from the past because this has been a documentary. So they were like, yeah, not this one. I don't want them to read about.
They're going
to
read this one because he is, because people recognized what a big deal he was.
Yeah.
And they were like, and with the Declaration of Independence and how sort of singular the whole event was of the revolution.
Totally.
That they had to know exactly that they were sitting in the, and if it worked, you didn't want a record of him going, oh, by the way, I wish you were sucking my dick right now.
Yeah, boy, I love your dick sucking, Martha.
Yeah,
that would have been.
That would have been a bit, would put the kibosh on it.
Too much.
Or, hey, can you go kill out 32 slaves because I need a new set of teeth? That would have been bad.
I, for one, would have felt differently about the whole thing.
Yeah.
But you talk about even the people at the time, because Napoleon was kind of, his trajectory in France was looking like it could be the Washington of France. The French saved our bacon in the war, like we desperately mm-hmm. needed them, and they gave us the Statue of Liberty, and we're sharing La Fraternité and Liberté and all this. We're very
right,
in
it's
line
all Voltaire.
Here.
And,
absolutely. And they start kind of, we're going to do it too. But they just kind of hang a right and start guillotining the rich. And it's a very, it turns a little differently.
Right. Well, so Napoleon and Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Lafayette comes from a very aristocratic, he's a duke, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
Right.
And George Washington loves Lafayette. He's like an adopted son to him. They are like, Lafayette was very, very close to Washington and observed and commented on, and they continued to correspond for a long time. Napoleon,
No,
but after the whole shit went down and Napoleon is living in exile. Right. Because he gobbled up power, because he didn't do the thing Washington did.
He didn't step down.
Once the dust, exactly, once the dust settled and the unlikely victory had taken place, he was like, great, now I'm the dictator of France. And he really
started to do. Right, now I'm king.
And they were like, you got to get out of here. And one of his letters
says,
they thought I was Washington.
Yeah.
Like directly says,
referencing.
They thought, and even acknowledges that that's good, saying no one's that good. The benevolence of this comes but once a life, saying in so many words, I'm just not that good of a guy.
Right.
Only George Washington's that good of a guy.
Right.
Which is rare to have the unique nobility of your character to be recognized in the moment of your life.
Right, is to recognize that you are not that good and to not aspire to it. And you have the example standing right in front of you, towering over you. Napoleon, I think like 5'10", 5'11".
Yeah. Oh, big difference.
And George Washington, 6'5", I think 6'6".
I heard 6'4", 6'6". It's
okay. Yeah, 6'4".
Kind of a
whatever.
Prince.
That's a factor. Tall. Mm-hmm. It's super tall.
Super tall.
And Napoleon, not as short as has been depicted in cartoons.
Right.
So he's always been depicted as being like 5 feet tall.
And it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't. No, he was perfectly normal.
But I
did just see his tomb, which was absurdly large.
So.
Still compensating in death.
Yeah.
To see the largest, tallest, mausoleum-y kind of tomb coffin thing in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
And it had to be like 6 feet tall. No, 8 feet tall. Whoa. Tall.
Yeah.
It was tall.
Does it also have like a sculpture of him, like a bas relief of his face? Or
it does not. It's his nephew was buried or interred in. An antechamber. It's this old church that got deconsecrated and got turned into essentially his, like a temple to him.
Oy.
And it's weird about him. I get mixed up with did Robespierre help Napoleon gain power? Do you remember?
I don't know. You're dangling toes beyond my dorkdom.
Right.
But my suspicion is that part of the issue is that if you untangle all of those connections, you'll find that their loyalties switched. I feel like the defining characteristic of the French Revolution is just that it was sort of a hang a left, no, we're right. No, these two are allies. No, you know, because I mean, epitomized by the fact that the guy, Guillotine, who invented the guillotine, was among the final victims of the guillotine. It just sort of, was this sort of self-fucking.
Well, and I read a book. It was supposed to be a biography of Lafayette, and it was written by Sarah Vowell. So it was a biography of Lafayette, but it was also anecdotal about her and her nephew.
Yeah.
So very funny. Mm. And it was great. And I love Sarah Vowell's work and her research is great. But one of the things about it was how Lafayette coming into the war and promising all this French aid actually helped to bankrupt the French government.
Sure.
Which led to the revolution, which didn't have, like, there was no way for Lafayette to be Washington, right? Mm. There was no way. Lafayette was not Napoleon, right? He was not the genius that Napoleon was.
Right.
But he was a better person than Napoleon was.
Yeah.
And, but Lafayette lived through all of it, died, came to the United States in 1821, I think it was. And, had like a 18-month tour of the United States where they built, there's streets named after him in every state
in the
country.
Minnesota, Lafayette Bridge.
Yeah.
There's a Minneapolis has a
everybody's psyched about it.
Well, sure. Well, and there was sort of a student exchange going on because Benjamin Franklin was the American oddity in Paris trying to drum up support for the French.
Right. They sent him over.
So Benjamin Franklin was not involved in a lot of the revolutionary stuff because he was actively in France wooing everybody.
Right. Right.
And in fact, it's fiction, but it's still a great line, which is Marie Antoinette saying that the Americans brought democracy and the pox in equal measure. and that they survived the pox. And I always thought that that was...
Oh, the French survived the pox?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But not the democracy.
But not the democracy. And I know it was... And it's weird because a lot of those original documents are from French philosophers.
Yes.
The very rich American founding fathers were like, yeah, we love this. This is a great idea. And yeah. then, but not for everyone, but just for us, because we feel ripped off. And,
right.
But the thing about Washington, so you read all of the battles.
Yeah. Well, so Dorchester Heights, because that is his first, because he was such a mediocre soldier. And when they were kind of like, oh my God, oh, we are really going to go into armed conflict with the British. Like, this is happening.
Right.
They were like, we don't even have a guy. Like, we don't even have a general. We don't even have a guy. And Washington just showed up in the uniform he wore in the French and Indian War.
Okay.
And he was not a legislator. He was never elected. He never aspired to be. He never gave any speeches. He did not sign the Declaration of Independence. That was not his arena. He would just kind of be present looking tall.
Yes.
And very well dressed, which, as we know, is enough for a lot of guys, especially rich white guys.
Right. Rich white guys and perfectly proportioned.
And nobody else was like me. It was just sort of like, yeah. And when it came to pass, they were like, all right, we don't know how many guys we have. We don't know how many guns we have. We don't know exactly how this works. We don't know if we have any boats, but you want to be the leader of this whole military thing? And he was like, you got it. Get a pen. Everybody get a pen. This is the first thing I want you to write down. I will. Second thing I want you to write down. I'm not up for it.
What?
I am not up for it. This
Wait, what? Use a whole sentence.
Yes.
I will what?
I will do this. I will lead the troops. Yes, I will. I will do
okay.
this. Number one, of course, I take it. I will do
okay.
it.
Okay.
Factoid two, I do not think I can.
Oh.
Now, that wasn't the point of it, because it's very eloquent, and it's very, let me say, I do not believe that it is within my individual power as a man to overcome these things, our odds are against us, but with divine providence and the spark of blah, 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 we will succeed. I mean, he was still being optimistic, but just very immediately kind of like, just don't nobody get your hopes up.
What, right, but I don't even know that he said that. So because he wore the outfit, they were like, you're going to be the guy.
Well, he had the most qualifications. Like, he was certainly of the people available to do this job.
And
George Washington was one of them.
He had the outfit. He shows up and they're like, you're going to be our guy because you at least have some military experience.
It's sort of like, yeah, who has the football gets to be quarterback. I mean, it wasn't exactly that. But the point is, he did not come in, for example, dressed as a military general saying, let's fucking go to war. I'm going to wear this uniform, a uniform of a military general. I'm going to climb to the podium and I'm going to also advocate that we need to go to war and I'm going to lead us. It was as you debate whether or not we should go to war and as you debate whether or not there is any individual who would or could lead us, I will simply be a visual presence.
Oh, that
tall ass guy
one.
Wearing the uniform so that when someone says, but we have no generals, it will be like, here.
What about that guy?
There's just... Again, significant because he looked the military part, but never crossed the line
right.
of I will also be a legislator. I will try to advocate for war.
Like, okay.
Keeping that line really
so
close.
So he went, essentially, it was a protest that he went to, or it was not a meeting. It was an assembly of some
it
sort.
It was the general assemblies that would have been available. It wasn't like he kicked in the door and was sitting alone in the house, but was sort of how he made himself available.
Because, okay, so he went to Boston where the Continental Congress was meeting or something.
Well,
is that what it was?
The Continental Congress would have been meeting in Philadelphia.
Okay.
The Battle of Dorchester.
Thank you.
So after they go, you're the general, we're going to go to war. His first thing was to go to Boston, where the British had set up.
I don't even know when Dorchester
The Battle of Dorchester Heights is in Boston.
Okay.
Siege of Boston.
So unpack all of this for me, because I don't know what this is.
So George Washington is a newly minted general.
When?
In 1776. We've signed the declaration in July.
Okay.
He's been made a general. He's been made a general in March. We signed the declaration in July. So the British are still assembling for war, but until we get the...
So Boston Tea Party happens.
Right.
That's in 75 or 73 or what? I don't know what that is.
So that happens. The Boston Tea Party is sort of the beginning of like the flurries, the shot heard around the world. Lexington and Concord,
right.
which is often considered like
the beginning
the violent
of the war.
Beginning of the war.
Right.
Was in 1774. Ooh. Oh. this is good. I might get a C plus on my paper for missing this one, but I want to say 1774. And then you get like and this is all a response to the intolerable acts, the taxation without representation, why the Boston Tea Party happened. Then the question of, will we declare our independence? Which would be the thing that would be the act of war. Like the shots
George
around
Washington
the world.
Isn't involved in any of this in 74, 75.
He is not John Adams. He is not Patrick Henry. He is not Thomas Paine.
Legislators and protesters and act.
Representatives. They've been voted for to go to legislation. They're lawyers. They're rich landowners.
But the thing is, the Declaration of it. So does he join the army at any point before the Declaration of Independence?
Yes. March is when he becomes general and goes to Boston and wins Dorchester Heights, which is a significant military maneuver. And I know if you're looking, you're like, but that's before July. That's part of the reason why he didn't get a ton of credit for it, because it's before July, right?
Right.
So the English were like, we have a bunch of guns aimed at you fucks.
Mm-hmm.
We're not stupid. We ain't blind. So we're just going to assemble the largest military force ever on Earth. We're going to hire a bunch of Hessians, and we're just going to stand over you with a bayonet. But no war. But we're waiting.
That's in Boston. That's not in New York.
They are mostly in sea and in harbor, but they are on land in Boston. So taking Boston would be a retrieval. It would have been it was expelling the British. They had kind of occupied Boston.
Right.
So before the signing of the Declaration of Independence, but after Lexington and Concord, so there's been some violent feet, but we haven't officially started the war. Washington goes to Boston, and in an incredibly unlikely, because fucking Henry Knox, you want to talk about balls.
Right.
Henry Knox brings a bunch of cannons from Canada over ice. I mean, it's nuts. And he's like, here's what we're going to do.
And that guy was a bookseller.
Yeah.
I remember about Henry Knox.
Yeah, Henry Knox, a bookseller.
He just read a bunch of books about...
No military experience.
But he'd read a bunch of military books about cannons. And he was like, I think we're going to need cannons.
And I know that are in Ticonderoga.
Jackie!
Okay. Ticonderoga, which is where...
Which
is a French and Indian war.
Right.
Battle.
And I remember he told Washington at the time. So Washington was involved before that.
Because that's the French and Indian War, which was the one why he's got his uniform, where he fucked
up. But when Henry Knox goes, it's not the French and Indian War.
Right.
Essentially, it's Henry Knox in 1775 saying, we're going to need cannons. There are some at that fort in Ticonderoga.
Right.
If I take 100 guys and bring you some cannons. But he talked to Washington about that.
No, you're exactly right. But the cannons that are in Ticonderoga
were from the French and Indian War. Yes.
So that's the part where Washington was like, oh shit, right?
I remember those.
And that's where Benedict Arnold done got his leg nearly blown off, which is a whole other story, because Benedict Arnold is a very fascinating character in all this. Would have been Washington, except he was a dick.
Right.
He was a bad guy.
Well, and was sad that he wasn't Washington, right?
I mean, and also
became bitter.
Yes.
He's a road comic who didn't get picked, what happened.
You're exactly
he's
right.
Just, he
felt
came
like
up with Drew
him.
Carey.
Everybody owed
and
him.
Drew Carey got picked to do the sitcom, and he didn't.
That's exactly
so
right.
So that's Benedict Arnold.
And he, while the like starting the show was demanding his cut before the show was a success.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like he was, I need to be paid. Where's my mansion? And they're like, dude, we haven't won. We still probably won't win. Like,
no, we're 7 years from anything,
dude.
So
Dorchester Heights.
Yes,
so,
please.
Henry Knox, we got to get these cannons up to Dorchester, because from that angle, we'll dominate the whole thing and the British will have to evacuate Boston.
That's right.
And they unlikely crazy get it up there. And British are like, oh my God. You're going to fight, are you, right? And so that's why it's a victory. It's his first victory. It's crazy unlikely. Puts him on the map. His name is all over newspapers all over the world because the British
retreated
leave Boston.
Yeah.
And they basically say to Washington, let's say, so we're going to go. We're not going to just kill everybody and flatten this city, which we could also do. You know it, and we know it, and everyone knows it. But we're not going to kill everybody here and flatten the city. We're going to leave. You aren't going to fire on us.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. You're not going to keep any of our prisoners.
Okay.
Right? And the like, oh my God, yeah. And that was like, oh my God, we won.
So that was the agreement?
That was the agreement. And the British left, and that was a victory. Oh my God, George Washington won.
Okay.
And then phase two was, we just got to keep New York. And right. We could not keep New York. We lost New York like this.
Right. And that bummed him out forever.
That bummed
right?
him out. But then, and then it was just ratcheted downhill. So like Dorchester Heights, Boston was great. Signing of the Declaration of Independence. Okay, we're going for it. Then there were like a few, like, and then we lost New York, Jackie. It was like, we put all of our eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
All of it. It's our port. We did. So that we, the American, which we don't, we're not a good force anyway, had to evacuate Boston. Now we don't have any food. We don't have any water. We don't have any shelter. We didn't bring enough stuff. We definitely didn't have any. I mean, whatever we had was like in the stores of New York.
We're
which
in
now they
New
have,
York.
And it's fucking November, and, December. It's getting
and
cold.
And the British have completely occupied New York.
Completely
right?
occupied New York.
Cornwallis?
Cornwallis. Okay. And General Howe. The okay. two Howe brothers.
That's right. One was a Navy guy. One was an Army guy.
Army guy. And a little still sort of like, did they fight as hard as they possibly could? Because like one of them was in love with an American girl. And history has some theories about the Howe brothers being a bit like.
Well, I do remember there was also prison ships, like American prison ships in the harbors in New York.
Yeah.
And a lot of American soldiers died in like the revolutionaries. The, you know, whatever, the terrorists
they were
that
the
we were. They just, like, tens of thousands.
Oh, it was
30,000, something like that.
Absolutely awful. Yeah, a lot of war crimes. And the British in general were terrible to the American colonials and didn't draw a clear distinction between the loyalists and the rebels. So, which created a lot of rebels, right?
Right, right, because that's going to create more rebels.
Yeah, you have these rich landowners who were like, God bless the king. We're so glad you're here. These rebels are destroying us and we hate it and we hate them. And they just rape your daughter and steal all your shit and burn your house down. And you're
right.
like, oh.
You're right. We got to get these guys out of here.
I guess you guys got to go.
Yeah.
And the Hessians were even
we're
less.
Just mercenaries.
Were just mercenaries. They hired guns. They just loved killing and that's what they were being paid to do. And
they were hired to kill and they did it indiscriminately, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
And these are the guys, right? Who and the Hessians were key in taking New York, too. So all of this devouring, and people, and it's so bad that's right before Christmas, Howe and a couple of other major admirals are like, turn their boats around and start to go back to England.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
1776 isn't even over.
Right.
We're talking July to November. They were like, done. We said it would be easy.
Right.
And they start to go. And then there's a thing. And this is why on Christmas Day of 1776, Washington crosses the Delaware.
That's right.
And in the most unlikely victory. That's why when you said, what was his first victory? It technically is Dorchester Heights. But crossing the Delaware and taking a Trenton, New
That's
Jersey.
Right. That's right. He took Trenton, New Jersey.
Was the thing that made
Because he captured people.
Yeah. A thousand Hessian prisoners.
Right. And all their stuff.
And all their stuff. And forced
it was a
the
real,
British
it,
to fight through the winter.
Yeah. That's right. That's his real first sort of big victory.
Huge.
Though Dorchester sounds amazing.
Dorchester Heights was amazing, but it was really a forced retreat before war was at its fever pitch.
Or even declared.
Or
so,
even
yeah.
technically declared. And then, but yeah, the crossing, and because everything was against them. You know, there was a crazy storm. The soldiers are already barefoot. They've already had their asses handed to them coming out of New York. And then a
Right, they retreated, right?
Didn't retreated
he,
a
didn't
thousand
he say,
retreats.
How am I supposed to lead? Wasn't there a quote in New York of, I can't lead men who
lead
retreat?
By retreat.
Yeah.
I can't lead by retreat, which he did. I mean, his expertise was in getting the fuck out. And there were some miracles in some of the ways he got out. Quote, lowercase italics.
Right.
Miracles. He, like, for example, the way they got out of New York, because New York, when they took New York, it was like, oh, fuck. And they had like, and the reason they took New York is because also Washington fucked up. They pretty much walked in from this path from Long Island that he just left undefended.
Right.
And somebody had said, we really should consider that they would just walk up from Long Island. And he was like, not going to happen.
Right.
So, they're in New York and they've got to hustle their way out. And at the last minute, it's like, okay, we're going to have a bunch of guys leaving the fires burning. So they think we're coming and we're going to sneak out all of our horses and all of our guys. And we're going to cross the Hudson and we're going to get out of here.
Mm-hmm,
and as they go, all the shit gets stuck and they're not going to make it. And it looks like the entire army, every single soldier that we've got under George Washington's command is either on one side of the river,
mm-hmm.
on a boat in the middle. Or on the other side of the river.
Mm-hmm.
The sun is going to come out in like 20 minutes.
Right.
And they're just going to kill us all.
Right.
We're dead. I mean, it's just going to be like so embarrassing. And it's happening in the middle of a retreat. And as like, it's like sort of like that moment in Toy Story 4
which I didn't see.
Where they're all like going towards an incinerator and it's really hard and they all hold hands and look at each other like, well, we're going to die. And you're like, what?
I think that was Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3. Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, you're right. Toy Story 3.
Because I did see that.
I didn't see 4. No, I didn't see 4. See, it hasn't left my memory. So the fog descends on New York Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly obscures everything.
Oh, okay. All and they make it through the fog.
And as soon as the last guy gets off the boat on the other side of the river, the fog burns off, and the British, again, in their letters, in their correspondence to each other, were just gobsmacked.
Right.
What happened? Where'd they go?
Where'd they go?
This can't be done.
Right.
So his retreats were retreats, and nobody is like, yay, they're going to build a statue to me for retreating. But wow, the retreats.
What did
they
he say? Amazing. They're going to build a statue to him?
No, he didn't say that. But nobody, you know, history doesn't build statues to people who defeat. You know, you don't win by retreating.
But I think there's great George Washington sayings, right? And some of them, not so much.
As much as I love them. And my daughter's middle name is Washington. No, he wasn't a great speaker. And he had great sentiments.
Mm-hmm.
His speech at his final inauguration and then his departure speech at the end are most quoted and quoted now because we're in a fuck show of political
nightmare. And supposedly co-written by Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah, and he would have absolutely utilized the best writers to help him. Like, there wouldn't have been
like anyone.
Like anybody did. That wasn't his.
Dana Gould does a great joke about how the guy who landed on the moon didn't write one step for mankind, a small step for mankind, or whatever. He didn't write that. That's an astronaut. He's not a writer.
That's right.
Clearly, other people got involved. He would have just went, holy shit, I'm on the moon.
Fucking A.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so George Washington used speechwriters, obviously.
Used speechwriters, which is not to say he wasn't eloquent and poetic, and he loved theater.
Mm-hmm.
He loved going to shows and stuff, but yeah, not he wasn't like Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was also a great orator and a great writer, and we have
So who cares?
No, so who cares about him?
Well, at this juncture, do a different dork for us about Lincoln. So then he fights Trenton. And he wins. But a distinctive win.
Decisive, distinctive, unlikely win.
Right. Now, he doesn't win again
for months.
Months. And I mean, like, he wins like every couple of, like every 6 or 8 months, he'll win something.
Yes. But that, it turns out, is there's a lot of dynamic. Like, I didn't go to West Point. But when you just study war in the abstract, it's one of those things that you would think we would know, which is an invading force that comes into a place where you have an army of people who are both defending their homeland and have motivations. But like the Hessians are being paid, like they surrendered really quick. Like, we got you. And they're like, whoop, okie doke, you win.
I guess we're going back to Germany.
Here we go, prisoners of war. And then you do the things we do in wartime. But like, people defending their homeland don't always abide by quote unquote rules of war. And they tend to improvise. It's like Eddie Izzard's great bit about the British will stand at the line and they'll fire. And they're throwing rocks and running out of nowhere and slicing your throat while you're reloading. And because we do that. And it's very much what sell terrorism. I mean, if you look at the American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, there were eerie similarities between this globally, indisputably more powerful force.
The most powerful army in the world
who has all of these resources. And everyone's just like, oh, my God, like you're literally talking about people in tunics throwing rocks. Versus Scud missiles.
And you're losing.
This is going to be over in a night. Mm-hmm. And here we are. And here we go. And here we are. And here we go. And here the Russians went. And here the Russians go. And this is just like...
The British went in the 1840s.
It's just what happens. And it's similar.
Stop invading other people's countries.
Right. Except now, if anyone of Native American ancestry is listening, they're, of course, like, not always.
Well, the actual... Because it was a twofold invasion of the United States. Like, to create the United States of America, obviously, there was firepower and there was mass murders and the burning of the Pequods and all these things. But there was also, you couldn't stop the settlers. It was the settlers more than, like, if we all just picked up and moved to Afghanistan.
Right.
Or in the case of the Chinese are invading Africa.
Right.
But they're literally just sending 40,000 people to Eastern Africa.
To just...
to live there.
Yeah.
And they're living and working in Eastern Africa. You're not going to stop that.
Right.
That's not... you can kill them.
Sure.
But there's just more settlers are going to come after them.
Right. And you know what you would call that? Now, it is a, you can call it a slow invasion, which makes sense. That language is perfectly right. If you were looking at it as a biological entity, though, it's immunity.
Oh, but...
do you know what I mean? You plant immunity. You give someone just a little something that in large doses would kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just going to give you little bits here and there and here and there until you just... you'd still... or chemo. We're going to blast you with this, you know, this thing, and then whatever survives is going to survive, and that's what we do,
well,
you know.
It's, yeah, I mean, there's...
it's so bizarre.
It's bizarre, but it's... but when you go in, like because of colonization, right? So
yeah.
Colonization, Great Britain comes into the United States, it comes into North America, whatever. And the settlers all come from various different whitey magoo.
Yeah.
And they spread out and there's rich people here and we're sending a lot of things back to the UK, to England, which they are benefiting from, right? I mean, they're making a lot of money from all of the furs and all of the wood and all of the natural resources. Then they can resell them and they get a cut of everything, right?
Yeah.
And they feel like they're doing us the favor, right? They're doing, but the people that have lived in what was the colonies in North America from 1630 to 1750 for 100 years, right? They start to think, well, we don't actually want you to get any of those profits. Mm-hmm. And that's what generates that sort of revolution, right?
Oh, absolutely. And also that they recognize that they were a part of a triangle. I mean, that was the slave triangle. It was the trade triangle. It was the British, the people with the boats would go to Northern Africa, pick up slaves and some goods, but mostly slaves, travel to North America,
right,
sell the slaves,
Charlottesville,
get tobacco and cotton.
Mm-hmm.
Then
and
they
molasses.
Would go to the islands, trade within the islands, and then go back. And a 3 points of a triangle made more money than just two.
Right. And I don't know if you ever saw the musical 1776. The guy who played Kit the Car, he was in Magna P.I. Mm. Anyway, he was in it. He did some singing. And he played John Adams. And John Adams... wanted to put an end to slavery in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
And one of the arguments from the Southern senators were, you're part of that triangle because those boats are coming from Africa, but then they're going up to Boston, loading up with molasses and wood and all these things. Mm-hmm. And so, right. But my other point was sort of the British occupation of India. You know, it took... the British were so certain that they, like... they were benefiting so much from all of that... everything they got from India, raw material-wise, and labor. But they never... They still thought that they were bringing civilization.
Right.
To India.
Well, that's why when you look at the founding documents... of these rich landowners, it's not a legal document about trade, which is not to say that trade wasn't a huge motivator and how much money we were making and how the British were exploiting us with taxes. Everyone knows the history, like that is arguably why it all happened.
Right.
But when it came down to what do we want? What are the stakes? What are we saying we want from you and you want from us? It wasn't a trade contract.
Right.
What they established was God does not appoint rulers of men. People select their leaders and have regular intervals in which they can dispose of or reinforce those leaders.
Right.
And Thomas Paine is putting the artistic spin on it, which is, this is the laws of nature.
Mm-hmm.
See how nature works. See how we have a law of a pecking order, a food order. And that is why we need to impose government, because our unchecked, it is this necessary evil, because man unchecked, just sort of power of the fittest, just devour the little and it doesn't work.
Right.
So
just
we need
sort
to
of
impose,
Locke and Hobbes coming through Thomas Paine, making it current.
So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, we need order. We know we have to have order. And let's just say that the best order, if we know that's the case, then the best order comes from the bottom up, and your father, your God doesn't appoint any leader, the people do. And that was what was so revolutionary about it, because you talked about them taking it from the Declaration of Independence and even the early parts of the Constitution from not only British Parliament, mm-hmm. but from the Scottish Declaration of Independence. People mm-hmm. had declaring independence from your colonizer wasn't the most unique thing that had happened in history. What was new here, what America did that nobody had done before, was dissolve the connection based on the laws of nature, saying you can't properly order us around from over there. Divine providence, decidedly not capital G God, decidedly not Jesus Christ, but some sort of divine providence imposes order on things, and you just can't rule us from over there. It doesn't work.
Right.
Also, there is no God that we all recognize. Therefore, God doesn't decide how things work here, lowercase g or right. otherwise. And there are no kings. Not our king versus your king. Not our God versus your God. No kings, no gods. And boy, howdy.
Right. And that was definitely very new and very unique. Mm. But so I think that brings us to him stepping down.
Yes.
Because he served 8 years.
Yes.
And he said, I'm not going to run again. Yes. And I don't care. And I'm going to go. So how long did he get to live retired? Any idea?
No, not long. He didn't think he was. His father died really young, and he didn't think after the revolution that
he
was sort of ready to like. Die. Oh, God. You know, that's a good question. I want to say he was in his early 70s. He died at home. They were, okay. you know, leeching him. I mean, it was some sort of infectious disease that overcame. It wasn't, we don't know decidedly if it was a cancer or a heart attack or
okay.
exactly what it was, but he was ill for a long time and the leeches didn't help
or
no,
hurt.
But,
no,
but
or
he,
hurt. I think that they hurt.
They may have yeah. hurt, but he
you,
wasn't
you,
care.
You don't want to bleed people.
But he thought he was going to die long before he was president. He went back to Mount Vernon after the war, like, and now I can die. So he really was truly reluctantly kind of brought into the presidency.
Right.
And even afterwards, they were like, so John Adams, who was his vice president, had one term and then, as you know from Hamilton, lost in his second term
okay.
to Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
But he was in retirement for a little while, but it wasn't his great years. He didn't
right.
get to really
he didn't really get to retire.
No.
No. But so he dies.
Yes.
And but I have actually read that his final inauguration and his retirement, essentially his retirement speech.
Yeah.
That retirement speech is amazing.
It's amazing. And it warns about just kind of the through line is like, just kind of fucking keep it together.
Well, keep it together. But the things that it does warn about are real. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he
foreign power has your best interest in heart.
Right.
And this is a guy who loved Lafayette, who was still writing him letters that ended with, I love you.
Right. Right.
Make your alliances where you will. We wouldn't have won without the French. Just know.
Yes.
The French had their cut. They mm-hmm. had their interests. They were yep. not doing this out of love.
Right.
Alone. Yeah.
Right. It, I think, but I know that, because one of the, I remember there was, it was, beware sort of the foreign powers.
Yeah.
And then also the division within.
Yes.
Right? It was, the bipartisanness of it.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And.
Yeah.
Because well, it was, and he had, was it he two had parties seen, when he.
It was the two parties, but he was as nervous, and rightly so, about domestic internal divisions too that maybe weren't even on the landscape of the political scene yet, because he had overseen the Whiskey Rebellion already.
What's that?
And there was a division even during the war before we had even won, but things were looking good. Generals were starting to like, we're not going to fight until we get paid.
Right.
Like we haven't gotten paid in a while. Not even just troops, but like his military generals. And he had to like bust some skulls and like, are you fucking serious? Like we have not won yet. This none of this stuff is assured, and you're going to like, I'm not going to help anymore unless I get my cut. Like, how dare you? So he had seen that, like, ugliness and self-interest over national interest before, when the stakes were still really high.
Right.
The Whiskey Rebellion is in that kind of crazy no man's land of American history, which is after the 1783, we've won the Declaration of Independence. We are our own overseers. And 1789, when the Constitution is ratified. So we
right.
have this like, ooh, what's legal? Who's in charge?
Kinda right,
like
right.
Mom and
pretty
dad.
Pretty loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they're on their way home, but.
Right.
You know? And the Whiskey Rebellion was because Hamilton and whatever, it was like, well, we're so fucking broke.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which Britain counted on. They were like, good luck then. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck paying all these warriors and cleaning up your cities and doing all the other, building your ports. Yep. We're going to come back at you, by the way, in 1812.
Yep.
Lose again. But they were broke. So Hamilton's like, all right, whiskey tax. It's a vice. Whiskey is a vice. So mm-hmm. people may not mind it so much. And they know we have to tax something. But whiskey for these rural communities like Western Pennsylvania had become like a currency. Farmers who had extra grain would distill it and ferment it and use it for trade. And it was like a big deal.
It was all they had.
It was all they had. And so to tax it was huge. And it didn't matter to the big distilleries, but for like the smaller ones, it could be crippling. And
mm-hmm.
there was a huge outcry. And they were like, you know what? We're going to fight for our independence from government.
And what year? And this was some like 1885
this was 17,
or something?
Or no, 1785? This is 1784, 1785. It was between... It was before the Constitution was in that time.
Yeah.
And George Washington was like, well, and it was in part because George Washington, I mean, they tarred and feathered the tax collectors, and they would just like the extent they went to not paying these taxes,
right,
made people really question, like, so what is our government even for? How big is it? How strong is it? Can it even, can it do anything?
Right.
And George Washington had to like ride down. With the military, sort
specifically?
Of like, mm-hmm.
He got on his horse?
Yes.
From New York or yes. wherever, Philadelphia.
Yes.
What was our capital?
It was
it New York?
It was, boy, good question. It would have been Philadelphia.
No. Okay. Might have been New York.
It might have been New York still. I don't know.
At some point, New York was the capital of the United States. And at some point, Philadelphia was the capital.
Brief. I don't know. That's a good one. Right. That's where I get like my, now I'm at a C. Shout at your iPods. Somebody Google it. Yell at me.
Yeah.
Fix me.
And
but yeah, he did. He had, and it took forever. I mean, they were like, stop that, you guys. And they were like, no. And they were like, okay, seriously though, stop it. And they were like, absolutely not. We think we can win. Just come and make us. And so Washington was like, all right. And he got the army together and went down there and they just dispersed. There was no armed conflict, which is why some people would be like, oh, interesting boy, Washington, what a guy. Could really just like, he flexed and everyone's behaved, but they also never started paying those taxes.
Oh.
Well, Jefferson became president and was like, you don't have to pay those taxes because that was his deal. And they just like dissolved. It just went away.
Okay.
We're still, it's 2020. We're still fighting right now whether or not a small rural group of people has to do what the federal government says. That fight has never gone away.
Okay.
The bottom line is, as long as we are just say no, and you're going to say, okay, well, we'll make you. And we say, okay, make me. And then they go, well, we're going to drive onto your property with guns and helicopters and make you. And then it's what? It's either Waco
right.
or it's Ruby Ridge or it's what? And it just becomes this like, oh God, like really, is the government really going to come down with the power to just like kill 200 people who refuse? And there's like,
sometimes they do.
Sometimes they do. And it's all, it's not, and we don't know yet. I don't think exactly. Cause as soon as you say, yeah, absolutely. Government needs to make sure that people, because it's a group you don't like,
mm-hmm.
like the people that took over the bird sanctuary, where it was like, you can't do that. You can't just take over a bird sanctuary. Remember this, the whatever it was?
Remember the bird sanctuary.
And be like, you can't
I remember
do that.
There was like a real sort of splinter group of Mormons who had a bunch of little girls that they were fucking.
Right.
And, but they're... And sometimes you want the, and you want them to go in and go, well...
Yeah, you can't let them do that.
We're not... The rest of us aren't doing weird shit.
Yeah.
Somebody should tell them to stop.
Oh, and by the way, it is illegal. Like, we already know it's illegal. Like, we have a right, quote unquote. We already wrote down, if you're raping kids in a house, people can come in and get those kids. Like, this isn't even controversial. Why?
Right.
And yet it becomes, you know, and we still, so as soon as you're like, yeah, the government should be able to kick in the door and get kids, like, no matter what, like, and you stand there with your hands on your hips, like, this is fucking stupid. Why isn't the government exercising its full power to go save those kids? And then you turn around, they're like, yeah, but in 1956... It was the Black Panthers, and the government was just, because we can't let these blacks take over the street. And you're like, no, they can't just kick in the doors of people of race because they're protesting the government. And you're like, yeah, but
they weren't fucking kids.
No, no, God, no. I'm not saying that. But that's what I'm saying is that if you're saying yes, it's such a difficult why we still fight about it in 2020 because we as an entity can't get over whose doors get kicked in for what reasons by whom.
Right.
We can all say, yes, we want him to kick down the doors for rape and for horrible shit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think because you said it, if they're already breaking a law, like a law that's already on the books, you can't screw kids.
Right.
You can't stay in a gift shop after it's closed.
Sure.
But the when sanctuary people, you're like, you can't just be in the gift shop.
No, absolutely.
And
no.
You're just, you got to leave. No, it's closed.
Absolutely. But the trouble is our laws don't always evolve with us. So when you had a time, for example, like the Loving couple, do you know this story?
No.
One of the first interracial couples that got the law changed. They are just a black woman and a white man deep in Iowa who loved each other and got married. And the government kicked in the door and arrested them, dragged them out because it was technically illegal.
Oh, it's against the law for them to be.
So we got to watch when we say this, because then it's like, but what if it's an unjust law?
Well,
and then we go,
you have to change that law.
Exactly. So then who decides what's an unjust law? It's why it's so sticky and so horrible.
Well, it's because of the sodomy laws and it's against the law to be a homosexual.
Right.
And it's against the law to be black and it's against the law.
So now you say, well, yeah, okay. So you can only kick in the doors of people who are breaking the laws. And then you go, okay, wait.
We have to change some
whose
laws
and laws at what time. And then we change, but that is why we are the great American experiment.
Right.
And we are ever evolving and our documents are ever evolving and have in them the ability to ever evolve so that we can get our brains around
the injustices and to have laws that make sense and laws that are good for everybody.
Right.
So it was amazing that George Washington stepped down. Dawn Brody, it's over an hour. We've done it.
We did it.
Yep. It's dawnbrody.com. BRODEY.
Yes.
Dawn_Brody. And the 25th, Story Smash, and February 13th, Flappers, Dating Game. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?